Blockchain Daisy Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
Understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled heat. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages past? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomsleps.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history.
Hey,
homie,
you've
got to
get us out of here now!
I won't let you die
down. Revolution.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And tell, but I've been seen with fire up. I've never been with anything less than mine. So fine, I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone fast with a girl named Bo. But somehow they just don't end up as mine. It's a death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for living in the movies and TV. Is watch my leading ladies kiss some other guy while I'm bandaging my knee. I might fall from a tall building. I might roll a brand new car. Cause I'm a stuntman who made Redford such a star.
And welcome back to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.org.net, revolution.radio on this day, January 10th, 2024. And this is High Noon, Chicago Brew at your service. Spending a few minutes things up and getting going, no matter how difficult it may be some days. But hey, tried and true here at Revolution Radio, we are on the air. Haven't missed air time quite yet. There's always been something going on during this time frame for a good couple years or more there. Definitely more. 2 years plus. We've been revving up this time slot for you. And we're doing it again into 2024. Still got a pulse. Got somewhat of a voice. And here I am. And so are you. And we appreciate it. The contributors, the participants, those who share Revolution Radio for 13 years and running. Now, I've been saying 13 years and running. I said it all last year. So are we still in the 13th year, or did we move to the 14th year? I still don't get my answer. So I'll just lie to you in that little white lie because I'm not even quite sure. So I'm just going to say 13 years and running. But I do know for a fact we are nationwide, worldwide, continent to continent, wherever there is a www to be accessed and perhaps a VPN if you need it. Revolution Radio can be accessed by those out there. And they can also, they can also contribute to this network as well via Bitcoin or other digital assets, and you'll find that information on Revolution.io, or you can do snail mail with check, money order, or cash tucked away if you can trust the post office, the USPS, for whoever may be working there now. I don't know, but you know, you got to be careful. Don't put any change in there, so I'm sure they're shaking it, looking. Don't put any birthday card envelopes because they're looking for that $50 from grandma. You know, so you don't want to do that either. So you got to be real careful. It's a dangerous world out there, and so forth. What else they got? They got a Patreon, I hear, my understanding. Yet does a residual via your debit or credit card or whatever you could hook up, a prepaid card maybe, and that'll go to the Patreon, whether it be $5, $10, whatever it is, whatever the case may be, couch change, coffee money, beer money, whatever it is, we appreciate it here at Revolution Radio, Studio A, Studio B. Again, 7 days a week, semi 24/7, semi, you know, give or take, you know, 18, 19 hours a day. We have our peaks and valleys or stuff going on here, you know, so there's going to be some dead air times, but, you know, going away a little bit, little by little. You know, I turned on the radio at it was probably 2:30 a.m. thereabouts, my time, Central Time, and I found I don't know if it was a rerun or if it was live. I don't know if it was Memorex or live or whatever, but I found Why Not, and that dude Nick, liberal Nick from Canada, and a few others on a round table of sorts, you know, kicking it away. So I don't know if that was a rerun. Someone put up a replay at that time in the morning. That would have been, you know, maybe, you know, 12:30 a.m. Pacific Coast time, 2:30 my time. So maybe somebody kicks up whatever, or maybe it was live. Maybe they pick up the server. So that's pretty cool, waking up at 2:30 a.m. and there's Revolution Radio on a Tuesday going on a Wednesday. That was pretty neat. I like it. But what do we got going on today? A lot and nothing. I listened to, what do I got? I don't know, stuff that I'm interested in personally, because I'm staying away from a lot of politics and whatnot, and it's kind of unfortunate considering, you know, I should be up to date with a lot of these things, but I'm trying not to let it weigh me down. All that low frequency, all that lying and gibberish and stuff that's going on, I know a lot of it's serious, you know, the flooding or borders and so on, you know, millions coming across. And for what purpose? What are they doing? What's the end game? Because all the information is very, very mixed. Very, very mixed information. We know we have a lot of deceased heritage Americans here. Okay? We know a lot of people have passed away, not just from the previous allopathic system and the poisons they're doing, the food, water, air, and so forth, the bad medications, the pharmakia, you name it, that caused a lot of ailments. They had people already dying at early ages. But, and of course, the medical system and the malpractice. Malpractice was like number three on the list. Two or three. 108, you know, it was a statistic in 2021. It was like 188,000 deaths a year just by malpractice. You know, and that was like whatever from surgery to bad prescriptions and so forth. Malpractice was just 188,000 at that time. And I'm sure that number was not even fully reported, you know. So it could be much higher than that even. But then, of course, they had the whole COVID game. You know, they were killing people prior to the actual jab laying out, being laid out and running the gamut. Killing people in nursing homes, people staying home from work, people, children being home from school. They're already creating stresses and tensions, and they were sticking that PCR test up people's noses, and they were telling people they had COVID, and immediately freaking giving them remdesivir and sticking on ventilators, you know, death sentences. So they were murdering a lot of people out of the gate, and especially in the nursing homes and so forth. And a lot of children and young adults, you know, of all ages, committing suicide, like literally taking their own lives
because of the stress and the loneliness and the change in their behaviors and what their routine were. You know, to imagine young teens that were going to school, had friends and, you know, cheerleading practice and football and all sorts of other activities they used to do. And next thing you know, they're cooped up in a house, you know, fit with Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat. And, you know, it weighed a lot of people down. And, you know, they were taking their lives. And the people that lost work, taking their lives. People like that ended up, you know, getting into alcohol and drugs. And, you know, now you got your overdoses and they're drinking themselves to death. And, you know, who knows how many homicides occurred with this, and, you know, spousal abuse and, you know, all sorts of things were happening in that time. So, and then they rolled it down. And that will go either immediately or we're still got this time capsule, you know, this time release where, you know, they're disabled and having my, you know, the heart issues or, you know, plenty of things going wrong with them. And then, of course, end game death. Anywhere from 5 minutes, you know, anywhere from 30 seconds, you're dead, you know, upwards of 5 years. So, I mean, so that's still going on. So how did I do that? So, again, what's the game with the migrants? What's the game with the border? What's the game with the rest of the world and what everything they're doing still? You know, we have this thing about the white hats and the black hats and who's really the president. We know Fojo, you know, is not the president. You know, those that are aware know this is play acting, that there really, truly wasn't an election of Fojo Biden. There really wasn't an inauguration because that was all just theater, play acting, pre-taped stuff. Craziness that they pull along. I mean, people out there that are paying attention see the masks and the body doubles, or whatever you want to call it, the clones, whatever the heck it is, but it isn't what was previously known as Joe Biden for, you know, the decades that he was loafing off and stealing and running a criminal enterprise out of the U.S. government for all those years. So allegedly, and I say allegedly because it's hearsay for the most part, but according to sources, the original Joe Biden died as early as 2017, as late as 2019. You know, so nonetheless, whoever the real Joe Biden was, he's dead and gone. It's dead and gone. I mean, if he does exist, he's in hiding, and, you know, this just using this pretend Fojo to whatever. I don't know. But in any case, what I was listening to today is an update from what I've mentioned before, DRV, the reevaluation of the currencies and the political systems and stuff. And this is going on worldwide in over 190, no, upwards of 200 countries. The reevaluations of the currencies, bringing down the banking system, moving into a new banking system. You have the BRICS, which has been building up for many years now, and more countries are joining that because that's going to eventually, the SWIFT system is going to be no more because that's going to be the old banking system with the old backdoors and the old cartel going on. And this whole new banking system is supposed to be the better banking system, and it's supposed to be more honest and more true blue and more accountable and so forth. And it's not going to be this Rothschild banking system anymore. Allegedly, the Rothschilds are basically lost. This is what I heard a couple months ago, and this isn't going to come up in the information I have today or what I'm going to play. But allegedly, you know, I heard this back in as early as November, that the Rothschilds were selling everything, like property, artwork, you name it, because whatever was happening, you know, their money was going out the window when they were being drained. Now, I don't know how true that is. But the information I have today, they're saying that the city of London's been cleaned out. The Washington, D.C. is being cleaned out. They're saying that the Vatican is being cleaned out. How true is any of this? I don't know. Because when you look out your window or you turn on your TV or you listen to any number of our broadcasts on Revolution Radio, RBN, Rents, Power Hour, whatever the case may be, you're certainly not going to hear it through there because it's just getting, not getting better. And again, who is the president? Now, allegedly, on one side of the fence, they're saying Donald Trump is still the president. On the other side of the fence, they're saying, well, it's still the corporation still exists, and they have the Fojo pretending to be president, where none of his staff, administration, have taken oaths of office or anything. Blinken hasn't taken off office, and so on and so forth. Kamala Harris is not even the real Kamala Harris, being played the part of who knows, but the real Kamala Harris, who knows where it is. But the real Kamala Harris could never have been qualified to be the vice president because it's, you know, her parents weren't U.S.-born, U.S. natural-born citizens, and neither was she. She or he? I don't even know. What is Kamala Harris? You know, I know a few years ago that I was watching takes of Kamala Harris. The vice president, Kamala Harris, had a tattoo on her arm, while the original Kamala Harris didn't have a tattoo on her arm, you know, so this wasn't just a case of throwing in a body double because they were getting off a plane, doing a speech, and so on and so forth. So it had to be whoever they're proposing was Kamala Harris to be the real Kamala Harris, but it wasn't the real Kamala Harris because had a tattoo and the original doesn't. So whoever playing the part of Kamala Harris today is not even the real Kamala Harris, so whoever knows where that, you know, carbag and Jew bitch fucking is. I don't know. Excuse me. Sorry. Shouldn't do that. Pardon me. Pardon my French. Great Poupon, please. But, so I got, I'm already sent into this. I have one thing to play. I have two things from the same product, the same host distribution. And one's going to focus on, the first one's going to focus on geopolitics, domestic, and so forth. And they're going to speak about whether Trump is president or Joe Biden's president. You know, one of the narratives we were playing with back in 20, well, we're doing a lot of this stuff. We had some real heavy conversations here, late night roundtables and so forth from late 2015 all the way through until, you know, 2020, into 2021, at least whatever. We're having big conversations. And a lot of this was these narratives with like Donald Trump. I tried to look it up today and I wouldn't know where to find it. I don't know what keywords to punch in. But during Donald Trump's, in his early years of his presidency, he allegedly, through executive order, whatever it was, took us out of the corporation. Like, the corporation of America, the corporate entity, was dissolved. Now, that's one thing. That's why today, with the Fojo, it doesn't matter who they put into office, Fojo, or it doesn't matter who, would only be the president of the corporation, but the corporation is defunct and technically not our president, a heritage American president. They are just president of the corporation, and their power and their reach is limited. Like, they can't take oaths of office or anything else like that. But on the other hand, we have the Republic. Donald Trump restores the Republic, so that would make him president. So it would make him the very last president of the corporation. Corporation gets dissolved, and he becomes the very first president of the reborn Republic. That was the narrative. That's what allegedly was going on and allegedly was happening, and allegedly is still ongoing today. We technically, in the eyes of the world, they see Fojo as president of the United States, but he's president of the defunct corporation. But you have Donald Trump, who is still president, but of the Republic and the true commander-in-chief. I know, confusing, isn't it? But here we are, because we live in a matrix. We live in this all play deception world for a very, very long time. And it gets easier and easier for them with the manipulation of the media and so forth. So anyway, let's get into it. And I highly suggest turning up the volume, listening intently. I know it's going to sound, some of this gets boring, but it's information nonetheless. So the guest on here, his name's, they call him SG, obviously, just like Chicago Brew or whatever else. But they call him SG. But the dude is apparently on point. Okay? I can't, like, call him out for anything. He's not saying anything about me. So is he saying anything outrageous to you? You call it out. Use your discernment. Okay? All right. Here we go.
And dive right into some interesting topics, okay? First and foremost, I want to ask you a question I'm hoping that no one else has asked you or has not asked you that often, and that would be with respect to the China-Taiwan. Like, as you're probably aware, Taiwan's elections are being held this weekend on the 13th, which stands to have significant impact on the world's geopolitical and eventually economical status as well. As you know, President Trump and Xi Jinping have long talked about the inevitability of this conflict. It's my contention that this is a staged event and that it's not going to actually last that long, but it serves a much bigger and vital purpose. So with that in mind, I want to ask you kind of two questions inside of the topic itself, if that's okay. The first being, how long do you think this event actually lasts, and when do you anticipate roughly that this might start?
You know, I appreciate the questions, my friend, and thank you for having me. You know, at the end of the day, I think that the China-Taiwan event has to dovetail with whatever happens with Moscow. China and Russia have been very, very sort of in lockstep, but not so much in lockstep. I know that that sounds a bit, but when we look at the behavior, right, it's very much cooperative at critical arenas and levels of society and rhetoric. But at the same time, it is diversified, and you can tell that both governments, you know, in both situations have their own vested interests, their own selfish motivations that they're moving forward in the world. But with the BRICS alliance and China and Russia being essentially the drivers of a lot of that alliance around the planet, any movement that China makes in the Pacific theater is going to affect BRICS in a very, very big way. BRICS is not a military alliance necessarily, but it is a geopolitical block of cooperation. There's a mutual spirit of, we'll just say cautious trust, if we could call it that, or, the pessimistic trust, but willing to come out to the fold, you know, to the fold and take a chance with one another. And that exists inside that block of nation state level. So what China chooses to do in the Pacific is going to have a major, major impact on the alliance that they're now a part of and that they're helping to bolster. And I think in many regards, to pivot from a petrodollar status to a more multipolar balance. Now, with Moscow and Russia, we know, or I shouldn't say we know, but we can expect, I think, an escalation of these hostilities on Kiev relatively quickly in 2024. The winter is always an ally of the Russian military. It's historic. That record's been recorded many, many times. The Russians are adept at cold weather fighting, perhaps the most adept in the entire world. And so this process has actually led in recent weeks to the encirclement of Avdiivka, which is a metro city in central, you know, north central Ukraine. And Avdiivka is not that far, really about a half day's journey from Kiev, the capital. And so we've got the Ukrainian military that has recently published figures stating, not the Ukrainian military. We have a Ukrainian prosecutor general who's come out publishing figures stating that the Ukrainian military is losing about 1,000 people a day. This attrition rate cannot be sustained. And so we know that a campaign on Kiev is coming if we don't see a surrender event of some kind orchestrated. And I don't believe at this time that we will. I think this is going to be a forced surrender. We're going to go all the way to the last man, the last stand, if you will. So Russia's escalation of that conflict should coincide, I think, if you're looking at the overarching theme, with a Chinese campaign. And the Chinese campaign, I don't think, will take very long. You're talking about an island that's, you know, a few handful of miles in any given direction. Your square mileage is relatively low. It does have an extensive underground network and a number of different naval asset bases, both at the surface and below the surface level within that island system. But the system itself is not nearly as vast and does not encompass nearly as much territory as the Russian situation and the Ukrainian situation in Eastern Europe. But it does stand to cause, whenever this campaign happens, it stands to cause a tremendous shockwave to global, you know, worldwide shipping and energy markets, and especially those financial sectors, because big tech relies on the semiconductors, the micro and nanotechnology that is produced in Taiwan almost exclusively, right? We have some contractors and some companies that have nearly all of their operations in Taiwan. NVIDIA, one of the largest computer chip companies on earth, has a lion's share of their operations in Taiwan. So this affects the big seven, which support the NASDAQ here in the United States, right? This affects the cornerstone companies, big tech, Silicon Valley. A major portion of Wall Street is propped up by the wealth that these individual companies have created. And so these companies are going to have an intense economic blow when this campaign happens. So we have to time this right, because it makes more sense to move on this campaign in a significant fashion when the United States military, Black Hat component actors remain in that military, is too occupied to effectively handle the escalation, right? And we've seen that in recent weeks with all of the different localized conflicts spawning off. And we see U.S. naval assets here and U.S. naval assets there and U.S. air assets here and U.S. Army assets and personnel and equipment, et cetera, being moved there. And eventually you run out of midboard. And so we're moving in that direction, I think, with the Taiwanese campaign. I think it's been very softly and slowly done. I think there's methodical negotiation in the background on how this is going to work. I think you're going to see a subjugation of the Taiwanese government here probably in the next months. And I believe the campaign will likely coincide with the expansion of hostilities in Ukraine with Russia.
Great. Thank you, Eshi. That very well, as usual, articulated. Yeah, sort of a follow-up to that, what you were just talking about. So I think Taiwan is probably more prepared than people realize, because they have landmines and things that they're expecting the drop to come. They're appraised of the situation, as you know, as well. It's not like they're in the dark about things. But what makes me really curious, SG, about this particular event, if you will, is that its potentiality to free up Vietnam, specifically politically, financially, with respect to their Vietnamese dong currency. I think they can be broken. The communism can be broken enough off them to free them up to escape, you know, all the subjugation, as you said. So I was just kind of wondering briefly what your thoughts are on that and the impact that that will have for them and maybe other countries as well economically once this conflict is resolved fairly quickly.
I don't think the effect economically in the region can be overstated. As a matter of fact, I think that's why this process has had to be so delicate and extraordinarily sensitive all in this journey that we've been on with this reunification issue. And the same is true. We can say the same is sort of an overarching true situation of what's going on in Ukraine. But as we saw then, and as we'll see in the Pacific theater, conflict eventually will have to come so that different removals of enemy assets can actually occur. Economically, I mean, when you launch a campaign in the Asiatic market block, right, you're going to affect all of the worldwide markets that come out of the basis of that particular market block. The United States economy is heavily, heavily entrenched in the supply chains that come out of China. We're also heavily entrenched on the supply chains that come out of Taiwan. But so are the Japanese semiconductor and microchip markets, right? Heavily impacted by what happens in Taiwan. The South Korean economy is heavily impacted by these Asiatic powers that are dominant economic influences within the region. Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, the same discussion, right? And it's worth noting that the CCP economy is just as based, if not more, than the U.S. economy, but perhaps not as grand of a scale, right? The CCP, took a loan of, I think it was like $70 trillion or something like that about 10 years ago from the Switzerland-based central, you know, the Davos central bank model around the world. And so that loan has been essentially the act of 1871 all over again, right? It's the exact same playbook where you're beholden to the interests of those that have yoked the debt on top of you. And so moving into this military campaign, if you're going to rock these markets, right, you're doing so in a very, very fragile situation. The Japanese economy is not nearly as powerful as it was even just 5 years ago. The same is true of the CCP economy. The same is true of Taiwan. It's really true of all the Asiatic powers, with the exception perhaps of India being part of the BRICS nation. And while the Chinese economy or the BRICS bloc, and while the Chinese economy has improved in the BRICS bloc, right, we've seen measures taken to bulwark and prop up and support that economic beast. That does not necessarily absolve the entire debt-based commerce system. And we've seen that with the bankruptcy of Evergrande and the receivership that occurred as a result of that, one of the largest developers, land developers in the entire world. So when this campaign begins, the shockwave to worldwide financial markets and energy markets cannot be overstated. It will hit the Asiatic region first. I think you'll see a severe downturn actually at first of economic markets in those arenas, and a rise of a revaluation on the other side of that, much in the same fashion that we've seen the controlled demolition and then the rebuilding from an asset standard of all these different BRICS economies, right? Piece by piece by piece, we've moved away from trading in fiat currency, trading in markets that are easily manipulatable around the world, to more exclusively trading in only assets, only something that has a measure which cannot be faulted or corrupted or manipulated at that nation state level. So I think this process plays out. I think it hits the Asiatic sector first. I think it's just a matter of days. I don't think it'll take weeks. I think it'll be days before we get that particular reverberation here in the North American financial markets, and in Western reverberations will come. The Chinese economy has sort of been the life support system by which the entire debt-based central bank model was yoked onto the world, right? And that Chinese economy has supported that debt-based model really for the last 10 to 15 years. So we're talking about reshaping that economic beast as well, right? And that's going to lead, I think, to a much more public purge that's within the CP, but that's a time for another, that's a discussion for another time. So this event, it can't be overqualified as pivotal, right? This is going to shift worldwide finance in a massive way. This is coming in the same overarching time frame, right? It's just been a couple of months ago that we saw this event happen in the Middle East, which is threatened to expand significantly. And these events potentially could be occurring at the same time. So you're talking about stressing Suez Canal supply chain route. You're talking about closing potentially the Strait of Hormuz. You're talking about bringing mass unrest and unsafety to or danger to the Gulf of Aqaba, which is a major, major shipping hub out of the Middle East and into the rest of the world. And then you've got the Indian Ocean, which is going to be affected by these issues, as well as the South Pacific. So there's no way that this conflict occurs in the Pacific theater and it does not impact Western and really worldwide financial and commerce and energy markets in a massive way.
Perfectly stated. I couldn't agree more. I've felt for a while, SG, that the staged conflict would be, you know, like you said, days, whether that's 2 or 4 days is negligible, but it would be a short term event because it's been in the making for so long. I had heard you on a show, I think it was a week or two ago, with a Christian Patriot podcaster whose name escapes me right now, but I'm sure you'll recall the interview. And you had touched on, if I heard you correctly, you had touched on, you felt, she'd asked you about economically, that you felt that Nasara and its impacts, broad reaching, and it, you know, reset and SAR and everything that, you know, as you said, correlates to that. You felt that there was, if I heard you right, sort of an inevitability that of a time frame with respect to the first and second quarter of this year, financial changes. If that is in fact what I heard you say, can you kind of touch on why you feel that this timing is so pivotal right now?
Well, the timing is so pivotal, I think, financially for a number of different reasons, right? If we look at the world through the shifting changes in the financial systems and markets, what we can see is a categorical de-dollarization that as of 1 January got put into afterburner. We have a number of different nations around the planet that are no longer going to trade in the petrodollar, and they bring oil to the table as their primary commodity. That's a major, major blow to OPEC in the long run. It's certainly going to be a blow to Western markets because OPEC will self-preserve before they will go out and allow the Western markets to sort of just take that all of the way to its knees. But I think it'll eventually get there anyway, to be perfectly frank. We have the alignment of ISO, I think it's 20022 requirements now moving into effect, which really establishes a banking and asset-backed standard for banking around the world, notably with international transactions, right? And so if you're going to trade in a system, if you're going to do business in a system, and you're flipping from fiat to non-fiat, you need the groundwork, the scaffolding, the infrastructure to make that happen. And those new ISO requirements are a component part of that. There's a number of different things that have occurred in the crypto space with massive fines and regulations being drawn out for fraud massive corruption also being shown at the governmental financial level with what's going on with Bankman-Fried and FTX. Sort of like Hillary Clinton in a different flavor, right? We didn't delete the email. She was super careless, but it's not a crime, right? And so it's the same general feel. And they wouldn't be doing these sorts of things publicly unless they absolutely had to. That's the problem. A lot of what's going on here represents loss of control at some level of worldwide market direction. You've got these BRICS nations who are disconnecting the African continent, disconnecting the Middle Eastern space, certainly disconnecting different components in the Balkans and Southeast Europe. And they've really been trying that for 20 plus years now. And we're starting to see momentum coming to these different continental regions. U.S. hegemony and the central bank dollar system is just not on the table anymore. And we don't have the focalized controlling we'll just say the focalized controlling interests in the West who are capable of effecting the type of regime change to counter those rejections of the dollar, like what we saw in 2014 with Gaddafi and Hussein Obama, and really going back further to 2003 and Saddam Hussein in Iraq, right? People forget that Saddam Hussein would not allow the Western-backed central bank system, the dollar-based system, to be utilized in their foreign trade. And say what you want about the man, I personally don't think he was a great guy, but he wasn't going to kowtow to Washington, D.C., so they made sure that they were going to remove him. And we don't see that type of power being displayed here in the world right now. We obviously have a guy who's acting as the resident in chief that doesn't even know where he's at most of the time. So the rest of the world is pushing ahead with the removal of the dollar as a form of entrapment. And the Western interests, I think, are aware of this.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, SG. Appreciate it. Funny you should mention the resident, because about a year and a half ago, a friend of mine graduated from the Naval Academy. I talked about this to another fellow patriot, and I'm sure obviously you're well aware of it, but I just like people to hear sort of your take on this. When he received his diploma, after it listed all the credentials, it said Donald J. Trump, Commander in Chief. And as you know, whoever runs the military ostensibly runs the country. So I just would love for you to briefly just touch on that for the people who may not be aware of it or just need a reprise of that, that, you know, President Trump truly does have his hands firmly ensconced on the wheel, and that all this was a necessary set of steps to get us where we need to be.
Well, it absolutely is. And this is where the information war gets really deep and dark and murky. And you have that broad view, 100,000 foot, you know, message in the message analysis to appreciate what's happening here. I've seen, you know, video and photographic evidence to show retirement commemorations, different commendations that have been issued to retiring military service members, officer schools, you know, like what you just described. I've seen evidence to show that some of them are being signed with Donald J. Trump and some of them are being signed with Joe R. Biden. And that speaks to the greater reality, which is that we do have infiltration at command and control within the United States military. And the only way to avoid a civil war is to force these individuals out into the light through a very irregular, unusual set of circumstances that they have never experienced before. And so that's what we've got going on in the world, right? We have a simultaneous mass population awakening, to this type of organized criminality and this militia style mafia that's occurring in the background, right? It's very militant, it's very aggressive, it's very terroristic. And a lot of it is made possible by corruption within these interagency departments and these different Pentagon arenas that overlap with the intelligence community, which serve really as the unelected government of the United States, right? And the same is true of different Western and NATO nations. So how do you get these individuals to come out? Well, you have an individual in office, right? President Trump, who responded to the COVID-19 bioweapon pandemic with devolution and a form of continuity of government here in the United States that placed certain component portions of the Constitution as it pertains to military command and authority. It put them into a stasis mode so that we could address the situation. It preserved the continuity of the government here in the United States with the lawful commander in chief. We've seen that through tremendous amounts, just exorbitant and incredible amounts of security for a former head of state. We've never seen this before. An individual going to court cases and hearings and speaking events with these enormous motorcades, with active duty, EMS units, and a number of different police and military law sort of overlaps, right? Where you've got National Guard in a certain area partnering with local law enforcement to make these events secure. So all of these are tell-alls, right? These are tell-alls to a broader conflict. But at the same time, we have chemtrailing over top of my house that drew a gun sight over top of the community that I live not that long ago. So this reminds us then that there are components, at these high levels of government, these high levels of military strategy and movement that are sort of vying for ultimate control over one another, because for the first time, we have a game board that has been flipped on its head to such a point that the enemy does not understand how to put this genie back in the bottle, right? And at the same time that's occurring, we have we the people around the rest of the planet who are simultaneously realizing that this is all a giant farce and that these same dozen or so transnational organizations, in cooperation with military intelligence communities around the world, have essentially controlled and usurped our governments for decades at this point. It's the worst nightmare scenario for the ones that are in that negative place that are attempting to act evil, because you have pressure that's kinetic on one field. You have pressure that's financial and business related, right? Intangible pressure, interdimensional warfare pressure coming from the other field. And then at the end of the day, the curtain, which is keeping everybody safe, is slowly going up, and people are beginning to realize that there's actors behind the scenes that are pulling the strings.
Indeed, indeed. Well said, as usual. SG, kind of dialing back to the genesis of our conversation we started a few minutes ago, I want to talk to you a little bit about the BRICS and break that down a little bit more. A lot of people feel that Saudi Arabia is an important component to BRICS. But in studying this for a while, my belief is that Iran is really one of the most important countries to join, primarily because of the influence that they're going to have. You talked earlier about the Red Sea, the Strait of Hormuz, and what that's going to do to oil prices, to spike them artificially for this short window of time as part of, as you said, the transition. But also really looking primarily at Iran's involvement in the BRICS, because I think what they're doing is they're using the BRICS as a shelter or a place of refuge, because what I see happening, and not just myself, but other people in the community see Israel making the grave mistake where they're going to attack the secret nuclear power plants that Iran is hosting. And also, as you know, Iran is usurping their power over their little brother, Iraq, with the corruption. That's what's been going on in Iraq for so long, in parliament, the fake proxy government, not unlike here in America and many other countries, as you know, throughout the world, England and so forth, that are basically just established themselves as self-appointed experts against the people for their own sense of hegemony. And now that's being broken up. So it seems to me that Iraq is going to join BRICS primarily as a way of escape once this attack happens, which will help to free up Iraq for the dinar and for their sovereignty. And I'm just wondering, I'd like to hear things on that.
You know, my musings, I think, are going to be primarily in agreement, because research is usually based on pattern recognition, right? We know the playbooks don't really vary all that much. Different faces, different places, different grammar, right? But the overall, so it's the same script. And so we see with the situation in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia is already in the BRICS alliance. Turkey is very, very interested and, in fact, has worked very closely with Saudi Arabia the last 6 months to bring their treasury levels to such a point that they can qualify for admission, right? Saudi Arabia loaned Turkey, I think it was $6 billion in solid gold last year, so that they could bring their treasury to a point where they would qualify for admission at an economic security stronghold basis, right? You can't just join BRICS if you're an ultra weak nation. You have to bring a resource, a value, something that brings, you know, value to the bloc, something that brings furtherance to the agenda of the bloc and adds real meat to the overall offering. And so Iraq stands to bring, obviously, antiquity, very, very ancient history. I think a great deal of written record Iraq stands to bring to the table. But they also stand to bring to the table a very, very important intersection in the Middle East, which is that Tigris and Euphrates rivers, right? And the commerce that occurs up and down these rivers. And it's very, very, it's an ancient area also. So there's an important component that ties back to that. You're talking about the cradle of civilization. You can take some of the areas in the Iraqi countryside back several thousand years. So they have a lot that they offer, right? Iran has a deep state within Tehran, just as they have Iranian patriots. And in the same fashion that we have a deep state here at home that is comprising a mass majority of the activity of our bureaucracy, the same is true in Iran, but perhaps even more extreme, right? The measures that have been enacted in place under the theocratic style of government, once that was captured by this worldwide hydra, they were very effective in all resistance. That's one of the reasons we have seen Iran of terrorism. We have seen Iran heavily involved in terroristic attacks that did not do we the people on any side really any good, except to accelerate conflict, drive prices and worldwide economic pressure that much higher. So Iran coming into the BRICS nations, I think it stands to provide a fatal error on behalf of our enemy, right? They're going to, I think, try and hide there, just like South Africa. They're going to try and hide there as a means of avoiding, you know, overall culpability. But what happens is you end up bringing the rest of the nations within that bloc, all of their attention, all of their resources, all of their support, to bear on what you're doing. And if Iran ends up with an active conflict with the United States of America, then the rest of the BRICS nations are going to demand to know why, and they're going to want to know if they're obligated under any sort of agreement within that bloc to meet that military conflict, right? So this is a powder keg situation that has to be handled very delicately. We have to remember that it was the Iranian revolutionary that was sanctioned in October of 2020 for violations of EO 13848 about a month prior to the election. The same Revolutionary Guard apparatus out of Iran is heavy in the design of software systems that go into that eventually make their way into election platforms like the DVS platforms that we've seen on display here in the United States for a number of years now, public attention sort of having been called to this group. Iranian cyber warfare capability ties into this also. You know, there's a number of different components that lead to this both being a good and a bad thing. I think that in the initial run, if they attempt to get Iran into the BRICS alliance, what's going to occur is you're going to have acceptance based on what Iran can bring to the table. It will further de-dollarize the world, but you also force the Iranian deep state component into an untenable situation by doing so, because now they're opened up to accountability outside of the West with nations that have a vested interest in understanding what's going on with Iran. And the Iranian people are going to, I think, support and encourage that en masse in a very, very big way. So you're talking about the death, really, of the theocratic political class at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, it has such broad-reaching implications, like you said, and as many do. I love your articulation of how you encapsulate everything so that it's broad-reaching but also digestible for people to kind of comprehend on a grassroots level. You had mentioned, or it had been asked, I should say, to you, that interview I was referring to before, and I thought it was a good point I wanted you to kind of, for our listeners to hear. Somebody had asked you about, President Trump, saying very definitively on September 25th, in less than 5 months, Biden would be removed, and that everything would change on a wide scale level. So with that in mind, do you believe this to be the case? And if so, why?
As of right, so October, November, December. So we're about 3 months into that prediction. We're looking at about the end of February, 1st of March for this.
Okay.
The timing, I think, is absolutely fascinating when you consider that the Trump trials happen at the 1st of March, right? I think some of them begin on March the 4th. And they're slated, I think, another set of trials to begin in May, somewhere around Memorial Day. It's very possible, as a matter of fact, that's plausible, that we see the Democrats dump Biden before this is all over. I think they'll be 25th. I think he may fall prey to the 25th Amendment. Impeachment is a possibility, but impeachment implies legitimacy. And there's a constitutional hangup with that that I just can't seem to get around in my research, which, if you're going to impeach an elected position, you have to acknowledge that that elected position is there lawfully because they're acting in an unlawful manner. So it's the diversion. It's the diverting away from their lawfulness that provides the basis for the impeachment. If they're unlawful by design, it doesn't make much sense to impeach, but it does make sense to leverage the constitutional process that is elsewhere to remove that position. And the 25th Amendment is one of those options. I think it's extremely possible. We have a situation here with this resident actor, and we've seen two or three different iterations of the same actor that are continually pointing us at a worsening of health, a worsening of narrative, a worsening of cognition. Everything about the guy is declining and failing, and it's on purpose. We're destroying not only his legacy, but also his impression in the minds and hearts of we the people everywhere, right? And so this process, I think, ends in a shameful removal of some kind. Perhaps he's forced to resign the presidency, just as Nixon in 1973, right? That would be poetic justice. Nixon was a complicated individual, right? He's not a squeaky clean man by any regard, but he was forced out of the presidency by the intelligence community at the threat of a pinder happening. And so that resignation was us being coerced with our elbow behind our back against the wall. This could be very well, I think, a moment of symbolic justice prior to March, right? Biden has a very late scheduled State of the Union, from what I understand, going all the way to March 7th or 8th. Which is one of the latest on record, I think one of the latest in the last 100 years. And so could that be because we're setting the narrative for perhaps he's not going to be giving the statement? That's going to be from someone else within the administration, ostensibly with the vice president select, which would be the Jamaican, half Jamaican, half American Kamala Harris, who's not actually qualified to hold the office and who's even less popular at this point than Biden is amongst the Democrats that still pay homage to those media outlets. So President Trump does not often say things that don't come true in some form or fashion, especially not the ones that get repeated more than once. And while he hasn't repeated the 5-month time frame, to my knowledge, he has said a number of times, including on Tucker Carlson with one of the largest audiences in the world, that it's extremely unlikely Biden makes it to the gate. I think we're being prepped for that removal, the original and unprecedented events here in the United States to kick off very, very soon.
Yeah, I'm with you. Absolutely. And yeah, I believe it was September 25th. So that would roughly put it around the, like you said, late February timeframe. I'm sort of, and I'm not exclusive in this, obviously, but there's others in the know who feel that what's going to happen is the House is going to push for impeachment, but that'll just bring pressure to bear of the inevitability of him stepping down, probably most likely, whoever that is, to a undisclosed medical illness to try to save face for the Democrats in the debate. But it will just reveal all the flaws and frivolities of that party and the deep state for many, many years. So yeah, I'm sort of anticipating a late February resignation, like I said, undisclosed medical illness, like you said, will set the stage and leaves them extremely vulnerable, which is by design. Pivoting a little bit to your point about Trump, there's an interesting article that came out today. I don't know if you saw it, Matt Wallace on X. He's reporting there's some type of an assassination attempt that they're going to try to use on President Trump. And I know it's been discussed before, but I would love for the audience to kind of hear, you know, your perspective and sort of facts on that potentiality.
You know, I think my opinion on that particular issue is still out to jury, quite frankly. We're still out of deliberations, but I would not put anything optically past this movement that we're experiencing here in the United States. So the idea of assassination on President Trump, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? We've moved to the legal lawfare. We've moved to the obstruction and interference of the electoral process. If we're going to move that needle any further in the sense of a third world, Manchurian corrupt government and the actions that that same government, that regime would then take to solidify its power, assassination and removal of political opponents by force is about the only card that we have left. How this plays out is, I think, anybody's game. I would not put it past the narrative space optically. I certainly would not put it past bad actors that remain, here in the world in this period of time, who are still as yet to select which side of history they're going to fall, on in the long run. That being said, I also believe that that's a major reason we have such intense security, not just around President Trump, but around everywhere that he goes, and even in the airspace, over Mar-a-Lago at any given point in time. We've tracked 3 FAA closures over the Fort Lauderdale area just in the last 15 months. Well, that includes Mar-a-Lago and all of the airspace over top of that, right? President Trump, I think, would be the number one man in the world with a bounty on his head if we were to consider the deep state as having any real true power. And remember that they do have some force left in them, right? This is a fight because we have to have the fight. This is not simply a pantomime, although that is certainly part of it, to force different components of the fight to move forward in a particular fashion. But it's because we need the kinetic assets to come out. We need to see where all the corruption is. We need to see who is being activated at the local, state, and federal level here in the United States of America across all of our different institutions, bureaucracies, agencies, military, et cetera. We need to get a broad view picture of everyone that's for us and everyone that's against us, and that takes time. And we have to ratchet the heat up. We have to ratchet up the pressure in the public space to drive that needle forward. And a great way to do that would be an attempted assassination. So this could come, as a narrative preparatory event. It could feasibly come from both sides. It will obviously be blamed on the Democratic side. It will obviously go down on the heads of the deep state bureaucracy, the intelligence community, the DOJ, the FBI, et cetera, were it to become a publicly acclaimed fact, right? But and we're sort of using nebulous hyperbole, or excuse me, hypothesis right now, because we really don't know. But at the end of the day, it could be a special operation as well, with intense effect to the narrative space, intense vitriol then cast against the U.S. government as an institution. Certainly you would activate, the war spirit, I think there's a line from a particular movie, "Let me see your war face," right? You would activate that type of response from the MAGA community, certainly from conservative, independent, red-blooded America. And that could very well prime our society for the necessary transition, I think, to a temporary state of military control at the forefront. We're already there in the background. It's already been happening, and it's been happening for 20-plus years. If we look at 9/23/2001 with Executive Order 13774, George W. Bush put the United States of America into a soft core shadow based military dictatorship. The different components of the Bill of Rights, the Patriot Act after that made much of those suspensions into a legal codex that we could then leverage against we the people. But leveraging the powers of the wartime powers of the presidency, George W. Bush invalidated a great deal of the U.S. Constitution and placed it into an emergency stasis mode. So this dictatorship scenario that we're talking about, which could very well include an attempted assassination against the leading political opponent, we really don't know. But that dictatorship situation must itself be realized out into the foreground so that we can drop it, so that we can cease national emergency conditions, so that we can return to common law basis and manage our nation as we are supposed to.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So tying it back, SG, with that in mind, with what you just shared, with the potentiality of and probably I would say, you know, the high degree of probability that the Biden is removed sometime in, you know, mid to late February or ish.
All right. I am going to sit there. We're coming at the top of the hour. A lot of this, some of this information kind of like is bringing back some memories for you folks. You know, things he's spoken about that happened over the years, especially this last point where he's talking about basically with George Bush and September 11th and bringing in the Patriot Act, putting us on this constant war footing. Where everything they do is just, you know, it's under the basis that we're at war. So they could just do anything that they want, you know, which includes things like January 6th, Charlottesville, and you name it. Everything's under war footing. You know, everybody's a domestic terrorist and so on and so forth. So they've been getting away with whatever they want. So we're just over halfway through with this conversation. I should have started it earlier, but I was on a ramble. So, and I'll fire.
Second. Atlanta Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday night between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B. It's the Jonathan Wright Show.
Find it right here at revolution.radio.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
The original machine had a base plate of pre-famulated amulite surmounted by a mammable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marsal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slot stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the upper end.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. All right. Thanks for listening while we took the break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Whatever. I went down to the beach and saw Kiki. She was all like, and I'm like, whatever. Then this chick comes up to me and she's all like, hey, aren't you that dude? And I'm like, yeah, whatever. So later, I'm at the pool hall, and this girl comes up, and she's all like, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. Cause this is my United States of whatever. And this is my United States of whatever. And this is my United States of whatever. And then it's 3 on the corner, way on my left. This dude comes up and he's like, hey, punk. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Then I'm throwing dice in the alley. Officer Leroy comes up and he's like, hey, I thought I told you. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Then up comes Zappa. I'm like, yo, Zappa, what's up? He's like, done. I'm like, that's cool. Because this is my United States or whatever. And this is my United States.
And welcome back to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.org.net, revolution.radio on this day, January 10th, 2024. And this is High Noon Chicago Brew on a Wednesday. It is a Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. Wednesday. Thank you. Whatever. Anyway, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Again, that was the first hour. This guy gets in all the RV stuff and the Nasera, all the geopolitics, and it's got some new stuff mixed in there. But, you know, the guy isn't just spewing the stuff on his own. He's bringing on people that actually seem to know what they're talking about. So I tune in what the dude's bringing, and I tune in the Telegram channel and see all the posts dealing with. Again, geopolitics, the money systems, and so forth, and how they're playing around in Iraq, and you know, all this other stuff. So it's just something to pay attention to. And again, we'll get more into that with that other video that I got coming up following this, which is very important because the lady seems to know what she's talking about. And, you know, it makes me seem foolish when I say I just don't believe it. I mean, it's convincing, but I don't believe it, that I don't know. Just don't know, man. I don't know what kind of voices that is. Gotta get my voices straight here. No, I don't know. We get so much misinformation. We get so much conflicting information, you know. We just know fiat dollar, the petrodollar here in the United States, which has done us well for the most part. It's been good for Americans. If you know how to do the system, if you had a decent job and knew how to save your money, spend your money, you know, invest your money, TradFi, crypto, stocks, silver, gold, whatever the case may be, you know, we've had it good here in the United States. A lot of people were out there abusing the system, fleecing the system. Corruption was rampant. There's a lot of thieves, white-collar criminals, these corporations, the government, you name it. But all in all, as a general human, as long as you had two brain cells rubbed together, you could put out your work energy, you know, and trade that, your efforts for dollar, you know, whether it be labor, you could trade your hours for dollars. Or you can invest it, you know, saving X amount of dollars and reinvesting it in whatever. You could have had tons of money. you did it if you knew what you were doing. That's the whole thing. You had to know what you were freaking doing. And if you didn't, you were, you know, a $50 millionaire getting paid on Friday and broke by Monday. Well, getting paid on Friday, broke by Saturday morning. How about that? $50 millionaire. You know, a lot of us have known that, and some of us have been that. You know? Beer money and champagne taste, right? But in any case, yeah, we've had it pretty good. We had a pretty good run here. But it's who knows if it's – we're going to face some harder times. You know, things are coming to a head. You know, I can't necessarily – it'll take me too long just to ramble on about it because, you know, all these thoughts, it's just – it's 10 different directions. So I'd rather let these other people do the speaking for me. But meanwhile, Revolution Radio, Revolution.radio, still runs on, you know, the currency. It's the currency that flows into the network that keeps it on air, keeps this bandwidth rolling and flowing, keeps the servers up to maintain and so on and so forth to get Studio A and Studio B, place for hosts to come on and, you know, sound like me or sound better to me or sometimes worse than me. I don't know. We have a variety of people here of all walks of life, which is a good thing. Everyone's bringing their little something to the table, and that's what makes Revolution Radio an eclectic source of information. Information, Mr. Robinson. Anyway, so check out the homepage, revolution.radio. Check out the website. Check it out. Look for the donation right there on the right in the front. You can't miss it. It says, please donate. You've got a couple people on their hands and knees with their hands out, and the sign says, please donate. No, that's not there. But I put an image in your head of two people on there, cartoon people, we'll say, holding up a sign, cardboard, mixed letters, help us. Keep the network on air so it can go worldwide, continent, sea to shining sea and all that other good stuff. Usually I go into a long diatribe about who's on air, who's not on air, and so on and so forth. Let's just focus on today. Today we do have Brooks Agnew following High Noon. This is High Noon from 5 to 7 Central. Brooks Agnew will be following us. X Squared Radio from 7 to 9 Central, and that will be followed by, we have a new show, some hosts, old and new. One of them's from Scotland, I believe. There's a pair of ladies that I heard following Brooks Agnew last week, and one of them's all the way up in like Scotland or somewhere. So she was up like 3 o'clock in the morning her time to do the show. So I'm not sure if that's going to be the same this week or not, but again, stay tuned, see what they're bringing to the table. They sound pretty good. I appreciate it. And that will be followed by, and this is Wednesday, Get a Grip with Mechanic and his latest format of whatever that may be, 3, 4, 10, I don't know, 4 people of any number of cast of characters that he may bring aboard and so on. All right, so we're going to get back into this John Dowling, this guy, SG. Last thing he spoke about with George Bush and how we've been on war footing ever since September 11th and so forth. But that's all thanks to the Patriot Act and all the other garbage they brought in there. So let's bring this out just a little bit further because I want to save some time for the next one. It was just going to talk more about the money, the RV, the revaluation of currency, the supply chain and stuff like that. That'll be following this. So let me run this one for a few more minutes longer. It's up to 50. It's 56. I'm at 36. So that's 20 minutes. I can't go that long. So I'll put another 8 to 10 minutes on this one and we'll burn this and then we'll go to the next. All right. You following? You follow? You got it? You cooking? All right. We good? All right. Discernment hats back on. We're at it.
Period of time. Would the SARA have an impact in terms of, you know, resting the election cycle? Because I don't believe that we're going to see a traditional election this year like normal because of all the obvious touch points connected. Could that be the way for the military? Because like you said on your last show with this truther, you were talking about the military doesn't have to go through red tape. They can just, you know, invoke the war powers and basically bring President Trump back in. Do you think that's high degree of probability, and might that happen within this time frame after the Biden's removed?
You know, honestly, I'm not certain. I really don't know about the particular time frame, but I do think that, there's a degree of probability in that scenario that we have to give some attention to and some credence to, because we're entering into unprecedented political waters here in the United States, right? We've been starting to turn the rhetoric up, and the symbolism for that matter as well. I mean, Biden gave this recent speech, I think it was January the 5th, at Valley Forge. It's so in your face at this point, with the symbolism and the references and the different history converging all at once here in the United States of America, that something enormous and original is coming. With the specific, you know, question about Nasara, I'm not certain that Nasara, whatever people want to call it, is going to be referenced by name necessarily in this process. But I think we have hidden the core components of that particular act and what had to occur as a result of that act within the continuity of operations plan, right? We've seen a transitioning from the financial system old to new. We've seen a seizure of wealth at macro enormous levels that almost pales to try and quantify and really give out there to the people. You're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different plane loads of gold, precious metals, gemstones, antiquities, mosaics, et cetera, going back hundreds of years here in the world that have been shifted and moved around. You've seen a number of Trump's executive orders extended by the Manchurian, which extend certain component national emergencies that are critical for the overall operation, including the executive order authorizing our soldiers. I think it's no more than a mil time and no more than a 24-month rotational period of service. That's been extended multiple times. And so, you know, the core components of that National Economic Security and Reformation Act, which is what NACERA stands for, I think are beginning to flesh themselves out in an espionage way, right? We're utilizing the continuity operation in the United States of America, along with different operations around the rest of the world that are all dovetailing in a special format, to shift around the core components of world geopolitical power, business power, legal power, academic influence and power, right? In accordance with the spirit of that initial document, that National Economic Act that we talked about. So a new election would have to at some point, right? Or a symbolic election administered in a way that's never been administered before in the United States, that has to be a part of this process. The Trump trials are going to show out, for example, that President Trump, I think, should be the lawful commander in chief. I think we get to that point where the election fraud presented will be so determinative, so inarguable, so collected by vast government institutions and agencies, massive reports all around the planet, certainly reports from the United States Air Force and Space Force and Cyber Command during these elections, because General Paul Nakasone told us that NSA and that Cyber Command were watching these elections in 2018, again in 2020. I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't follow the same pattern in 2022, right? So these trials are going to present out categorical definitive evidence to show that the election of 2020 was attacked and was usurped, and the election of 2016 was also attacked. And it was just, I think, a stroke of God's grace here in the world that we were able to overcome that particular attack, and that people were in the right places at the right time to make sure that we had the right person in office to leverage the U.S. executive. So when this comes out, and it's supposed to be live streamed to YouTube, which has a wide reach, when this comes out, we're going to learn that the NATO nations have been stealing elections from one another vis-a-vis their intelligence communities, right? We're going to learn that we're not really all allies. We've been attacking one another in the background, and even a lot of our elected representatives have had no idea that these events have been going on. And they drive context that is so important to the international discourse. It's so important to understand who we are in the world. So after that comes out publicly in a big way, what then is the response from the United States Department of Defense? We now have a categorical situation presented potentially on the heels of Biden resigning and just heading off into the annals of history, ostensibly to avoid the that's coming out with these Trump trials. But that's going to show that we've got the wrong commander in chief potentially. And that is a constitutional and nationwide, countrywide crisis that even your most gaslit blue-haired lil would have a very hair on their neck standing up reaction to. You mean the wrong person is in charge of the military forces of the United States? Whether you like those forces and support them, whether you dislike those forces and disagree with their mission and existence in the world, the fact that they do have such influence and power, that there is such a world structure that may be under the wrong hands at play, that is very disconcerting for everyone, regardless of political ideology. So in this entire process, I think, could very well lead to a questioning, a pausing of our society, likely coinciding with deep state desperation crises that they attempt to foment and create in this process, where we put the nation into stasis publicly and we say, okay, we need to figure out what has occurred here. And if we have the wrong commander in chief, we need to read the right one into the position publicly. We need to have an interim government representing the civilian population with their last lawfully elected representatives, and we need to get to the bottom of this.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Just a couple of touch points, because I know we're almost out of time. I don't want to respect your time, obviously. These two, on my Telegram channel, we post a lot of different articles of information, not unlike yours, primarily financial, but some geopolitical as well. And I thought this was noteworthy to bring up with you. It's information that came out today I thought was interesting. The two articles themselves don't necessarily directly, but at the same time, as Q said, everything is, you know, is connected, and it had to be this way, and that we would see arrests and resignations. And one has happened today, and obviously the other have happened behind the scenes, but are now starting to come out in the full for the normies, we'll call them, of society, the larger contingency, as it were. Sky News reported today that court documents have alleged sex tapes taken of Prince Andrew, Clinton, and Sir Richard Brand by Jeffrey Epstein. This we know on the inside track. It's interesting now that a mainstream source is starting to finally acknowledge it. And then Inside Paper today is talking about French Prime Minister Elizabeth Borne is resigning the presidency, and she formally handed a resignation into Macron as part of the resignation, we'll call it initiative. I was just wondering if you could kind of touch on those two subjects and how they all kind of tie together in the totality of what we're looking to see.
Well, once you appreciate the different hierarchies out there, right, and this is for the audience that may be coming new to this discussion, once you appreciate the hierarchies of power as they actually are, in other words, the president, while a very influential and powerful position, is not the end of the road. It goes above that. You get into the banking class, right, the banking elitist. Then you get into the entrepreneurial transnational globalist class. Then you get into the royals, right, who sort of control those entrepreneurial globalist class. The Epstein operation, and it is an operation, sought to gain influence within those classes that supersede governmental levels, nation-state boundary lines around the world. So you would be talking about the royals, you would be talking about the globalist transnational corporate billionaire club, and then, of course, you would be talking about the banksters that sort of serve alongside and in some cases sort of below them. It's a nebulous blend, but they make it work. So these individuals would be your targets with any sort of blackmail operation, regardless of what the basis of that operation is, because these individuals are necessary to control the presidents of countries, the prime ministers of countries, the different elected officials, the academicians, the clinicians, you know, all of the different people around the planet that are influential in making the machinations of society turn at the public level, where the public, the mass population, interacts with community, commerce, society, et cetera, and they live out their lives. The rest of the group at the very top, in a perfect world for them, and it has been for a very long time, is able to hide in the background, leverage any sort of agenda, any sort of push, any sort of change of mentality and thought that they wish out onto the world with very little blockade, because you have a staggering, a cascading level of blackmail that comes from the top down, right? It starts with the capture of the top, and then all of those individuals and components assist the beast in capturing the rest of the operation. It's a mutually inclusive, self-sufficient, self-serving locus of control, and we the people aren't invited. So Jeffrey Epstein is indicative of one of these very high level blackmail operations that ran across all different arenas of society, ran across prime ministerships, ran across presidencies, ran across academic schools of thought, presidencies of universities, right? Ran across the scientific field, involved Bill Gates, we know, and Bill Gates evidently had quite a close relationship with Epstein. Bill Gates, of course, being heavily involved with Klaus Schwab. So it's ignorant to think that Klaus Schwab and his agenda at the WEF would not also be connected to Epstein and the various operating run by that blackmail group. So you have the release of these documents coinciding with a couple of very interesting moves at the international level power-wise. You have the resignation of the French prime minister announced in the early hours this morning. And then about a week and a half ago or so, you had Queen Margaret II of Denmark decide on live television that she was going to announce that she was abdicating the throne. It's the first time that a queen from Denmark, a Denmark royal, has abdicated in more than 800 years. And this evidently came with no warning. No prior preparation for the family. Everyone found out at the same time that Margaret had made this decision. So one has to ask, what is occurring in the information space? What is occurring in the narrative and the minds and hearts of we the people that is presenting such a concerning situation that you have royals and governmental ministers and different level institutional employees and business and, you know, business executives and things like that that are resigning or turning over of their various organizations, such as Soros and his son, Alex Soros, right, turning over the running of their organizations to other individuals. I personally think that you could make the case. I don't think it's that much of a logical leap to think that these individuals may not be cast in a favorable light as it pertains to certain individuals around the planet who are being very highly exposed in a very public and embarrassing way. And they may be looking to get the heck out of Dodge, if you will, before the pitchforks come to the governmental palace. So, you know, and now again, this is speculation, but it's drawn from very fascinating correlations relative to the preparation of what's occurring in the narrative and psychological warfare space. And we know that this espionage conflict around the world is primarily centered there, because what the people believe and know will determine what the people will press for and what type of pressure and push we can really put against the deep state. And when we get back into the position of the United States presidency, who is not beholden to these interests, like Donald Trump, for example, at that point, if we the people are on a consciousness alignment level, there is no hope for this group of individuals. So this is existential for them. And you may have individuals deciding that they're not going to roll the dice.
Yeah. Well said.
All right. So that sounds like a good little stopping point. That's 48 minutes and 49 seconds into the video, and it's at 56 minutes long. So we're just stopping short, 8 minutes shy. There's a little bit more to go. I'm sure it's some good information, but we're going to have to get on to the next one if we're going to try and fit this into this second hour here on High Noon, January 10th, 2024. So we're going to pick it up with this other lady, Holly Celiano, it's C-E-L-I-A-N-O, if you want to look her up, Holly Solano. She's going to bring about information about the currencies, the banking system, the RV, other things, talking about being a good person, changing your life habits, changing your lifestyle. You know, if you're good, be better. If you're bad, be better. And if you're good, work on even being better than that. I don't know. It just whatever. She's going to get into a bunch of stuff. But again, starting with the financial system. So keep your ears on. Reevaluation, the RV, and the banking systems. And banking, as banks as we know it, are no longer going to be what they are. She's going to get into this. So keep your ears on. Here we go.
But before we do that, let's kind of do a cursory overview of our last discussion in regards to the new year and the RV. What can you share with our viewers as far as what you're seeing from a 30-foot view financially, what we can anticipate? Not so much dates, but just sequence of events and how you see things playing out specifically with the first quarter.
Sure. So I like to look at globally what's going on, because that gives you a real solid proof as to how this is progressing, where too many people just focus on, you know, gurus saying certain dates, and they're not focusing on the broader picture. So I've written down a bunch of things that kind of tie everything together, where we're at with the global markets and this whole global event happening. So let's just start with banking. So there's been a lot of notices out there that Chase and other tier one banks have been reporting that they're doing training on exchanging currency, and that's going to be completed soon. So there's been a lot of noise out there, and people have bank stories that have reported that they're hearing that firsthand. Banking will be done worldwide through personal accounts on the Starlink satellite and via QFS. So banks are being transitioned from service providers, and they're not going to have access to your account like they do now. So all of banking is transitioning. And a lot of people are saying all these banks are all being restructured and revamped, and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Like a lot of them, even my own bank has done a complete revamping of new furniture and setup and, you know, carpeting. So they're all preparing for something. There's been a total ban of the U.S. fiat dollar has been implemented in Iraq, and that came out on January 1st. And nobody is buying the former U.S. Treasury notes, but LIBOR has now been transferred to SOFR, and they are gold-backed, and they are using the U.S. Treasury notes, which is also gold-backed. The Treasury is generating digital treasuries, and that's gold-backed, and that's what we're using. So with Iraq going and saying that they're not using U.S. dollar anymore, there would have been a complete collapse in that market had they not been switched over to the U.S. digital gold-backed currency. Everything would have collapsed. So that's going on behind the scenes that people aren't really paying attention to. But that's why this is all still being held up, because they're using U.S. currency. If they weren't using those digital currencies, the whole thing would have come tumbling down. So here's some things nobody's talking about. The U.S. is gold-backed. We've been gold-backed since March of 2022. And that is not the fiat dollar that's gold-backed. That's the USN. Iraq and BRICS are probably accepting these digital gold-backed U.S. dollars for oil and other commerce. And that's why this, in my opinion, things have not blown up. So in 2018, the collapsed U.S. Inc. happened, and we've been in this contingency of war government with running. And that, you know, most people aren't paying attention to that, but there really was a collapse of the USA Inc. ExxonMobil just handed over all of Iraq oil fields to China, so they're not doing that via the U.S. The U.S. military is exiting Iraq and handing back the keys to Iraq, and that's been another thing to put them on a stable level government and playing field. So you have the three pillars that are comprised of Washington, D.C., the City of London, and the Vatican. Those have all been gutted and cleaned out. And you could see that in the news, but and I have my sources that have confirmed that those are all gutted and cleaned out. Here's something else I just read. The Black Swan event isn't, most people have been thinking it's going to be the crash of the stock market. But they're saying, what I read was shipping and supply chain event, where they keep saying, watch the water. Well, that's what that Black Swan event is. It's the crash of the shipping and supply chain. So that's why we keep hearing stock up on supplies and have that 3 weeks, because if this shipping stops, people aren't going to get anything. The shelves are going to be emptied really quick. So just as Iraq is de-dollarizing, the world, in my opinion, is also quietly doing a sweep of all the fiat dollars and their banking systems. And this is comprised of the older U.S. Federal Reserve notes. They're just being kind of quietly swept clean. So Iraq said they would get rid of the black markets of selling currencies in December. They have done that. They said they would get rid of the U.S. dollar January 1st. They have done that. They said they would join BRICS. They are. They would make an announcement on the timetable for the new rate mid-January. That's coming out come the middle of January. And then just another thing as a side note. So I understand the holdup for this whole RV has been the world court. signing off on everything. And in December, the cabal made a last-ditch effort to try to hijack the QFS system. And that's why this didn't go off in December, because everybody expected this to happen. So they tried to get NATO to take it over. That did not happen. The White Hat Alliance wanted everything blocked legally to stop the cabal, and they went to the world court. They had to be ratified under common law and not maritime law, and that's why this has been delayed. So from what I understand, everything's been signed off by the world court, and you know, nobody's going to know the date when this happens. Everybody thinks they'll, you know, put out a date and that's going to happen then. No, there may be 5 people in the world that know when this is going to happen. And it's going, even, I don't care how high up you are, they will not know. It will be kept secret until this happens. So nobody can predict when this happens. The UN has pulled out of Europe, and the reason that they're stating that is because the electric bills have gone up 300%, which, you know, obviously there's something more going on there. There's been over 250 banks have failed because they're not Basel IV compliant. And just this week alone, there are 64 U.S. bank branches that have announced closure in a single week. And we're seeing more and more peel back of the curtain with the Epstein disclosures coming out, with the Miami Mall aliens being seen. So there's more and more disclosure coming out. So everyone's trying to figure out a date when this will happen. You have several calendars. We have the Gregorian calendar that was started by Pope Gregory in 1582, and they just wiped out 10 days with that calendar. You have the Julian calendar. That goes back to 46 BC, and that adds an extra day every 128 days, and then you have the solar calendar. So when all these dates are put out, people don't know exactly what calendar we're using. And then lastly, we have Protocol 20. So it's part of the QFS. It's a network upgrade. So on December 18th, the testnet was a successful upgrade. Then on December 19th, there were 20 versions of Stellar Core, Horizon, Sorbna, EZ, and Stellar released. And then there is another upgrade, well, not an upgrade. It's a vote on the 30th of January. It is to see if they're going to permanently upgrade it. So all of this ties in with QFS, the Protocol 20, and all the testing. And that's been beta testing behind the scenes for a very long time. So that's kind of an overview globally where we're at. So I'm up for air.
Well, thank you, Holly. No, that was a great detailed and comprehensive overview. We certainly appreciate that as always. Two questions for you just to kind of absorb the genesis of what you shared. It's my understanding from the relationships that I have, and I've asked several people to get, you know, confirmation that because there's this contention within the community, you know, QFS is good, QFS is bad. Seems to be a split consensus on that. But the relationships I've talked to have come back and said that the new system is going to be run by Christians, which will benefit the Christian community instead of, you know, compromising us the way we've been, you know, to this point, at least, you know, optically speaking. So the first question of the two is can you confirm that? And then number two is we had an interview yesterday with SG Anon, I'm sure you're aware. And one of the things we talked about was Iran's importance in the BRICS, because everybody's focusing on Saudi Arabia, and they certainly play a pivotal role, obviously. But I think sort of the Iran alliance is the dark horse, because they've been such a problematic issue for Iraq, being the bigger brother and the corrupt proxy government, like we talked about last month. But now they're going to have to, when Israel attacks them with the secret nuclear oil field attack, nuclear site attacks, force Iran into a surrender from the mistake that Israel is going to make. So I guess my question would be is, do you think that Iran running into solace to the BRICS to avoid all this stuff, Is that more of a mistake than a benefit in your estimation based on what we were just discussing?
Okay, lots of questions in that. So with Iran, what I understand we're seeing is all theater. Everything's been done already, and it's just being played out in real time. But it's all been decided. It's all been done behind the scenes, and they're just playing it out. So I, you know, all these countries all have to get along and be part of the same team. So them joining is, they're really, a lot of these wars are looking like they're opposition and things are going on just to create massive distraction. But they're all part of, you know, they've have all worked out already behind the scenes. So everybody's eventually going to be on BRICS because nobody wants to be left with the U.S. fiat dollar anymore. And it's really being just taken away slowly from all the markets. As far as the QFS being run by Christians, I haven't heard that per se, but the old way of banking, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, you know, all the corrupt banking, banksters, if you want to call them that, they're going to be gone. It's going to be a transparent and free, healthy coexistence with banking and money. So you want to have your heart in the right place. You want to definitely be on the right side of this because there is a major shift happening. And people, when this whole thing comes down, you're going to see who's good, who's bad. And if you're a bad energy, you won't be able to make it. You just won't be able to last.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Thank you. Thank you for addressing that. So now that you've kind of given us a very articulate, you know, overview of more or less where we stand to date, let's pivot to the second part of our discussion, which I know you were very passionate about discussing today. And that is something that I'm planning on doing for my followers what I believe will be the right time. I didn't feel that we were there quite yet, which is why we have done this show. But after talking to you, you seem to feel very strongly that we're closer than maybe people anticipate because, you know, there's the old adage, how close is close? Because that's why we don't, like you said, fixate on data here. We're about facts and puzzle pieces and trying to use the best discernment to draw your own individual conclusion. So with that in mind, you felt it was important to precipitate the discussion that we eventually want to have. And a lot of our followers have asked us to discuss, which is, you know, planning post RV in terms of banking, in terms of new equipment, phones and computers and the like, and, you know, how to transition into being your own central bank. So I'll kind of just turn it over to you and let you articulate, you know, why you feel we're in a position to be talking about this now and what people in your estimation should do to make the, you know, the leap and the preparation post RV.
So most people just focus on give me a date, give me a rate, and they're not focusing on preparing for this. This is a spiritual movement. There is an energy with this whole thing and complete reset of the planet, of the banking system. And as we're part of this, we're also being reset ourselves. They go hand in hand with each other. So I have been telling everybody, prepare for this mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, because if you have not, you will not be able to handle this responsibility of this wealth unless you are prepared. And too many people are waiting for this to happen to prepare themselves. So before we go into things with, you know, phones and whatnot, I just want to talk about, like, physically, are you taking care of yourself now? If you need to lose weight, lose the weight now. If you need to exercise, you know, start doing that on your health. And, you know, so many people are, I'll just wait for a med bed. Well, no, prepare yourself now. This is something we can do to prepare ourselves for this. If you have unsupportive habits or poor choices, start breaking those, because everybody thinks the med bed's going to be a one-stop fix them of everything. And that's not true. Emotionally, prepare yourself for this life-changing event. Can you handle what is coming to you? Will it overcome you? Because a lot of people have never had wealth like this. And if you're not prepared for this, to be able to handle it, it will consume you. There's lottery winners that have said they wish they never won the lottery because it destroyed their life, because they were not prepared for this. So that's why this is a long time for us, quote unquote, humanitarians, to prepare ourselves for this, because if you're have been working on yourself, you'll be able to handle wealth like this. A lot of people have a fear of being successful or wealthy, and there's a lot of emotions that come with that. Start working through that stuff now. Don't wait till you get the money to work on that. Mentally, have you mentally prepared for this wealth? Does excess wealth make you feel unworthy? Because a lot of people have that feeling of unworthiness. Do you feel you're not deserving? Prepare yourself in faith in the unseen. Prepare yourself for this. You have to be mentally tough for this transition. It's going to be life-changing. When you're on the other side of that appointment, if you haven't done all these steps, it will destroy you. And that's why I really feel people have been given this much time to work on themselves and start dedicating this year to healthy new lifestyles and working on yourself. So look, we'll put that aside. And then with the preparation of this post-RV, so you definitely want a new computer. You don't want to use the same computer. You want one computer that's dedicated just for the banking and only use it. Don't go on the internet and do searches on it. So have a separate computer just for the banking. A lot of people have been told and think that you're going to get a computer at your appointment. I don't believe that's going to happen. That I just, you know, something that's been put out there. Same with the Q phones, that we're going to get a Q phone at our appointment. I don't believe you're going to get them. I believe they will be available and you can purchase them. And, you know, definitely get a new phone and get a new phone number. And, you know, take yourself off of all of social media, just scrub yourself. And if you don't know how to do it, there are definitely companies that can scrub you off of the internet. You want to disappear, because people that have been following this know who's involved, and they will try to find you and, you know, offer you anything to try to get your money somehow and steal it from you. So, you know, really just be super careful with your security. Be aware of where you're going, your whereabouts, what you're doing. Change your habits. Don't have the same habits where they can, you know, track and say she goes to, you know, the coffee shop every day at 10 o'clock and then she goes to the grocery store by noon. You know, change it up so people don't know your habits. I would even recommend, you know, move out of where you are living. Go move somewhere else. Get a new vehicle. The wealthy people blend in. So you don't want to go flaunting your wealth. You want to just blend in to your environment where people can't tell that you're wealthy. What else is there? Do you want to add something that you've heard?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what you've been saying and processing it. I mean, you know, because like I said, I'm going to do a whole separate show for my followers on the protocols I'm going to use. But a lot of what you're saying checks off several boxes for me, especially with, you know, I've always told my followers three things: change your mindset, right? Take action, and so where you prosper. And by that, I mean, not just the church. If you go to church, for example, if you're not prospering at that church, I mean, you pay your tithe, but the offerings is a special thing. That's where you get blessed, is in the offerings, because that's where the generosity is. And I've tried to, you know, help my followers be mindful of the fact that wealth doesn't define your character. It reveals it. It makes you more, it reveals more of what you already are from heart, because a lot of the issues we deal with are heart issues. And as you know, it's been proven medically, societally, across the board, is a pretty strong consensus of people are now aware that a lot of physical ailments start from the heart. For example, if you're carrying bitterness and enmity towards someone, you're harboring unforgiveness, that can manifest into physical issues, heart issues, blood pressure, cholesterol, what have you. So, you know, changing the mindset is also a component of changing your thinking and what you speak out. So just, you know, every little thing that you do should be, you should, the people here that are really dedicated to doing this the right way already know that they have been taking steps, like a construction project. You do it in stages all the way. You don't wait till the very end to try to, you know, force up a building and wing it. You strategically plan everything from the architectural to the foundation has to be solid, and so you can build on it, right? Just like anything else, a relationship, what have you, it has to be built properly in steps and stages and be in the long haul. So the mindset has to be correct, and it also has to be a, as we talked about, a long-term prospect. You know, you can't just think about, well, I'm going to be well and pass away. It's what about your, you know, the Bible says a good man leaves an inheritance for his children and children's children. So, you know, it's thinking about your legacy. It's thinking about, you know, what are you leaving behind? What are you creating that can be built on for several generations, and then educating said generations so that this never happens again? Because otherwise we'll fall back into the same place. And the whole point of this isn't to be a temporary band-aid fix-all. It's to, as you said, reset the entirety of your mind, your body, your soul, the financial markets, how you, your attitude. Go ahead.
All of humanity. It's resetting humanity, because we are so far off of what our core values are. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've just become, I read something yesterday on Facebook that we are the only country that has a man that's been a beauty queen, the number one swimmer or something. And it's like everybody that they listed was a man that's being posed as a woman. So our society has gotten so far askew from true core values, what really God and Jesus and, you know, what was established for this country, for this society. And it's pretty sad that, you know, America is becoming a laughingstock in other countries, because we are just, we've gotten so far away with being what we're really supposed to be about and going back. You know, this is a biblical event. This is, you know, resetting us back to our true nature.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add to the cachet, Holly, of what you were saying, just let some of my followers kind of have a sneak preview of some of the things I will be discussing when I have my own individual, like a weekly wrap up type of show that, you know, I do. That's when I'll kind of bring this kind of, it'll be kind of like a special report or a special, you know, highlight. One thing I recommend when people get new equipment, phones, computers, iPads, what have you, is change your password. And then change it again, because they're going to be looking for us to get new equipment, and they're counting on us using a password that's familiar that they can hack. So, you know, triple encryption, you know, but just changing those passwords several times, even again after getting new equipment, I think is an important step for people to take. Also, I think, like you said, you know, the mindset about money, how do we treat it? Some people are very cavalier. You know, they spend in a certain area and not in others. So it's sort of unbalanced. There tends to be a lot of fear about money for a lot of people, that if they can't give much because they won't get it back. And my attitude about the wealth is, you know, you treat it like the ocean. When you go to the ocean, wherever you live, or a lake, what have you, if you just sit and study the water, if you were talking about watch the water earlier, the tide isn't a one-way effect. It's a, you know, I've told people this wealth transfer isn't a tsunami. It's a series of waves, right? So surfers know this because they watch the waves and they watch for the patterns when that next big wave is going to come that they can catch. If they miss the last one, they stay with it to get the next one. Very much investing, right? You buy the dips. You hold on when everybody else is holding on because you know that there'll be a position for you to get back in at an equal or greater marker. But back to the tide, when the tide goes out, it also comes back in. There's a flow. So what I like to do is keep my hands open like this. So when the tide comes into the wealth, I'm extending it out graciously to others with discernment, of course, not just, you know, people need to be careful about not just, you know, giving away. Another tip I have is with families. This is one thing. This is, I'm not an ATM. You're not going to come at me and because I'm as generous and say, oh, you know, so-and-so gave me whatever, $100,000. Now I'm in a jam because I spent that money on other things and over leveraged myself. Let me just go back to them for another set of money to undo my mistake. Healthy boundaries for people with regards to blessing family and friends is going to be paramount because it's not only setting boundaries with them, it's setting it with yourself and respecting yourself with the money that you're given, because ultimately it's God's money. It's not yours, right? This right. is a gift. We're supposed to be doing God's work, kingdom work, our talents and our purposes of why we're here. We're not here to just pay bills and die. And that has been the prevailing mentality because that's the brainwashing and inculcation of mind control that the cabal has established on us over many generations. This people understand. But when you understand that, you have to take action differently. If you want different results, you can't continue to go down the same path. So like you said, change your habits and do it voluntarily. I think being flexible and adaptable is the way I've been able to survive all of these different, you know, stops and starts and delays over the last 11 years, for you, 13. And I think that adaptability is going to be equally important in the changeover that we're going to experience.
I just want to go back to what you were talking about, giving to family members or friends money. And most of us have not had this kind of wealth that's coming to us. So there's this part, I don't want anybody to suffer. I don't want anybody to go through what I've gone through. So let me, because I now have things, let me just give everybody this wealth. And if you keep doing that over a period of time, like we have been training ourselves to adapt and adjust to having this wealth. These people have not been doing, they still have lack mentality. So if you just keep giving free handouts of money, they're going to come to you, like you said, like an ATM. And it's, you know, putting them on maybe a program. Listen, I'll give you this, I'll help you out, but, you know, take some wealth classes, go educate yourself, do something to better yourself so you can prepare for this. And, you know, don't just constantly give handouts to people, because that's what I see happening. So many people are going to do that because they feel bad for other people and they want to help everybody. But you'll lose your money as quickly as you got it if you do that with everybody. So that's why you really need to be prepared for this on all levels of your being so you can keep your wealth. This is generational wealth that we want to develop and heal this entire world by doing the programs that we all want to do, you know, that are near and dear to hearts. So yeah. There's so much that encompasses with this. And I know, like, even these rooms, I'm sure, I know every single room is being read and monitored, and they must just shake their head with some of the stuff that they see people say.
Yeah.
I know I do.
Absolutely. And I concur with that because I've seen those rooms before. So I know to what you're referring. Yeah. And just kind of in adding an additional sort of addendum to your point, Holly, that, you know, in addition to holding boundaries, you have to think bigger picture. Like if you know your family's patterns, I'll give you my family as an example. You know, some of my cousins in South Florida, you know, they're teachers. They've been established for a while. That's fine. You know, I don't ask them what they make, but you know, I know in that area per capita, you're probably looking at somewhere between there's a calling that goes seeds is a new currency. And we know that Hollywood does predictive programming. So they have to tell us the truth without making it obvious. But for those with good discernmental ability, they kind of pick up on those cues. And so, yeah, seeds is another part of the wealth transfer, because you could have all the money in the world, but if you are stuck in a smart city or you don't have access to clean food or, you know.
All right. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We're going to stand by for Brooks Agnew on Studio A. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and that's going to be followed by the two ladies that took over that next time slot from 9 to 11 Central, and that'll be followed by Get a Grip with the new format, two, three, four people on at a time, whatever the case may be, with that show there. And then I don't know. Then it'll be Thursday and starts all over again. So you guys keep your head on a swivel, be good to one another, and all that other good stuff. These all two shows we just have played here are, you know, hey, to each their own, believe what you want. They are what they are. It is what it is. We're getting all sorts of conflicting information for a long time now, so what more can we do? Discern.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. We smile through, just like you always do.
Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia. Type freedomslips.com, the people station.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me the day! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern...